Online shopping is easy and convenient, and the Gun Dealio smartphone app makes it inexpensive, too. Deals on guns, ammunition, holsters, optics, lasers, and more, available day and night. Load the Gun Dealio Apple or Android app today at GunDealio.com.
Hey, welcome back to Gun Talk. Tom Gresham here. If you'd like to join us, 866-TALK-GUN. If you want to follow me over on Twitter, I am at Gun Talk. I give, well, regular updates, usually several times a day, so you can find out what's really going on out there. And, of course, you can also follow us over on our Facebook page. Just look for Gun Talk over there. We have, well, quite literally thousands of videos available. Everything from gun tests to hunting videos to self-defense to training to pretty much anything that has to do with guns and at least owning and shooting and using guns responsibly. Just look for Gun Talk pretty much anywhere you get your videos. As I mentioned before, there's an awful lot of things going on in a hurry right now. In Congress, in the states, in the courts. Who better to keep us up to date with what's going on than Alan Gottlieb, the founder and the head of the Second Amendment Foundation and the Citizens Committee for the Right to Keep and Bear Arms. Alan, welcome. It's busy time.
Tom, it's extremely busy, and thank heavens for shows like yours to help get the information out to gun owners who need it when things change on a minute-by-minute basis out there.
Well, thank you for that. I mean, I feel like this last week, I've just been whipsawed. It's like the texts are going crazy, and I'm going, this happened and that happened. You got the Ninth Circuit. You got the bump stock decision. You've got things going on in Congress. I mean, it's like, you know, the NRA debacle is just more and more. Where do you want to start? When you're trying to tell somebody what's going on right now and what's important, how do you start?
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
That's really a tough one.
I know. I mean, you got the Ninth Circuit, you know, saying that there is no right to bear arms. That was bizarre.
Yeah, but not unexpected.
No.
You know, the Ninth Circuit still has an anti-gun rights bent to it. And they stalled it out a little bit because it was an en banc panel. It could have gone to appeal from the appeals panel right to the Supreme Court. This stalls it a bit to buy some more time for maybe Biden to get somebody onto the court. And so that's partly what was behind them going en banc on it. But it was a loony decision. I mean, and it's easy to pull it apart. The dissenting judges did a really great job in their dissent explaining why it's a stupid decision. And also, I think, quite frankly, that the Supreme Court is going to take a Cowrie case. I'm really convinced of it, but I'm not sure it's going to be that one. I think it's probably going to be one out of New York or New Jersey or Maryland first.
Yeah, I think that they, on Friday, the Supreme Court in conference was considering the next New York case, you know, and we may know this week if we're going to take that. A lot of things headed that way. I do want to spin back on the Ninth Circuit. If people want to look it up, it's Young v. Hawaii. It's a 215-page decision, but if you want to read something brilliant, start at page 108 where you start with the dissent. And the judge that wrote the dissent, I thought it was brilliant.
Yeah, and he was joined by, you know, I think three other judges as well. So, I mean, it wasn't just a lone dissent.
Right.
And it was brilliant, Tom, and there's no two ways about it. It laid it out perfectly. You know, and when your listeners go to look up the Young case, remember there are two different Young cases that have been at the Ninth Circuit, one on concealed carry and this one on open carry.
Uh-huh.
So you want to pull the most recent one, which is the open carry one.
One of the things that, you know, and I tell people, look, we're fighting two battles, or at least on two fronts. You have got the legislative thing going on, both in Congress and in the states, but then you got the battle in the courts. And I don't know if it's me whistling past the graveyard or wishful thinking, but I keep thinking that if we could get the right decisions coming out of the Supreme Court, it could take care of a lot of the legislative things, because it would simply say banning semi-automatic rifles, for instance, is unconstitutional, and those all go away. Am I grasping at straws here with this idea?
No, not at all. And I think that's where we're all headed. And after Amy Coney Barrett was confirmed to the Supreme Court, we launched the Second Amendment Foundation, a giant campaign to stack the lower courts with all kinds of suits that go on up to get something before the court. High Court, and I'm sure we're going to. It's just a matter of time. And, of course, we're all impatient. It's protecting our rights against all these legislative threats are really important to all of us. But we're moving in the right direction there, you know, and we've had a lot of court wins in the last few months as well. I mean, the Boulder, Colorado ban on you know, semi-automatic firearms was struck down under preemption that they don't have a right in Boulder to do that. And under similar preemption laws in Washington State, we took out you know, a storage law on how you could keep your gun for self-protection in your own home, knocked down an ordinance in Edmonds, Washington, and Seattle, another one in Seattle, Washington. So, I mean, we're doing okay, and a lot more suits have been filed, stacking things in the courts to move in our direction. I'm kind of excited about it, actually.
It's an interesting time, and I know I hear from a lot of gun owners, they say, well, it's just terrible, it's terrible times. Joe Biden's in, the administration's anti-gun, all that's true. But they don't seem to be aware of our successes, and we are having successes. And to your point, as soon as Amy Coney Bryant was confirmed, the Second Amendment Foundation, I mean, immediately went in and instigated a number of lawsuits with the idea of, we're going to put these in, and our plan is to get them to the Supreme Court with good cases as opposed to, and there are some junk cases that people tend to file, aren't there?
Unfortunately, that's true, and those set us back a bit. But like as USA Today noted this past week, the Second Amendment Foundation this year has filed 17 suits in federal court. And as the Washington Post pointed out, we have like approximately 40 cases going on nationally right now.
Wow. Incredible. I mean, you know, and the reality is Second Amendment Foundation is a relatively small group. It's not like 5 million members. But it's funny, I was just talking with some people this week. They said, you know, I just went ahead and did a life membership to SAF. And I said, well, that was $150. He said, yeah, it's only $150. And another one said, well, I did the 5-year membership, and that was only $50. That's what I could do. I said, well, that's all good. I mean, that's money well spent. And frankly, you can't say this, but I can say this. A lot of people are not going to send money to the NRA right now. They're still waiting to see what happens. But I don't want people to be sitting on the sidelines, and Second Amendment Foundation is out there doing things and making things happen.
Yeah, I got a letter in the mail with a $50 check this week from a woman who's retired. She was a school teacher for over 40 years. She does not own a gun, but she's sick and tired of every time there's a school shooting that they blame the gun and not the person that did the shooting. And she decided that she cares about her constitutional rights, even though she's probably never going to own a gun, and she joined as a 5-year member. That really pulled at my heartstrings a bit. Here's a retired woman, doesn't own a gun, but realizes how important our constitutional rights are and sends in $50.
Yeah, somebody on a fixed income says this is $50 is a lot for that person. So that's a big vote of confidence. And I think there are a lot of people who feel that way. And here's the interesting part. And sometimes drives our gun buddies crazy when I say this. I say, but look, it's not just conservatives who believe in the Second Amendment. There's a lot of folks who self-identify as liberals and Democrats who support gun rights. And I always say, you can't throw away that support. And they will actually put their money where their mouths are, too, and they will do work. So I'll take help from wherever it comes.
Yeah, we're totally all-inclusive. You support Second Amendment rights. That's all we care about. But unfortunately, like it or not, it's very hard to name any Democratic Party leaders who support Second Amendment rights.
Yeah,
you know,
really.
From the White House down, you know, Schumer, Pelosi. I mean, if I have to take a look at a national pro-gun rights spokesman who's a Democrat, there really isn't one. The closest we come to one might be Joe Manchin from West Virginia, who owns guns, cares about the Second Amendment. You know, he also wants to put his background check bill through. He opposes the background check bill passed by the House and the gun ban bill passed by the House of Representatives, but I can't seem to get him to sponsor a pro-gun rights bill. So based on that, and that's the closest we come to a national prominent Democrat, and you know, they won't really speak out on our behalf, and so that's a problem. There must be a lot of frustrated Democrats out there who aren't exactly happy that they can't even find a spokesman in their own party who's willing to stick his head out above the sand.
How much do you think it makes a difference to have Amy Coney Barrett on the Supreme Court now?
Makes a giant difference because now our Chief Justice isn't sitting in the middle deciding if they're going to take a case or not take a case. You know, you only need four justices to take a case, but you need five to win it. And I think Amy Coney Brian pretty much is, you know, you can confirm that she will vote for Second Amendment rights, which gives us our fifth vote. So it negates a little bit about the Chief Justice playing any political games there. Mm. And I think if she votes our way, it forces him to vote our way as well. So I think you're going to see some 6-3 decisions coming down on gun rights, not 5-4.
Oh, that would be huge, wouldn't it?
It'd be very huge, and I'd like to see it go a little bit more like, you know, 7-2, and get one of the Democratic appointees picked off. I know it's in private conversations on certain issues, a couple of them sympathize with us, but getting to break ranks with your party is rather difficult.
It is, and there shouldn't actually be a party for Supreme Court justices, obviously. I'm just in the process, just started reading Neil Gorsuch's book, A Republic, If You Can Keep It, and he makes the point that there shouldn't be left and right judges. They should be, just basically making decisions on the basis of the law. That's the idea. We know it doesn't always happen that way. So where do we go from here? What are you working on these days?
Well, basically, we're doing an awful lot of, we're reaching about 15 to 20 million people a week right now between the foundation and the Citizens' Creed for Right to Keep Your Arms on social media, text messaging, and email blasts. Both on, fighting legislation as well as educating the American public as to what's going on gun rights. And I think we're having an impact with that. If you just saw the Rasmussen poll issued this week, 64% of likely U.S. voters don't think that any, new gun control laws can prevent any mass shootings. And 51% don't believe gun control laws prevent any of these things to begin with only 39% thinking that they do. So I think our message is resonating and getting out to people right now, despite when you have the legacy media, the dominant liberal media, obviously pushing an agenda. I think we're getting our message out through other ways, between direct mail and our TV ad campaign as well. That we have running for both groups on national television. Mm-hmm. And next week we're doubling up on that. There's going to be, I think it's 87 national TV spots between the Citizens Committee and the Second Amendment Foundation, running on national television on 21 networks.
Huh, that's huge. That's great outreach. And I guess, my message is just, it's fine for us to think about a group like the Second Amendment Foundation doing all this stuff. And that's important and necessary. But at the same time, I always drill it back to the individual. It's like it takes all of us acting as individuals, each of us doing something, making the calls, talking to people, writing the letters, making the comments online. I mean, each of us has to be his and her own activist in this fight, right?
Right. It's boots on the ground. Groups like the Second Amendment Foundation and Citizens Committee for Right to Keep and Bear Arms could be the artillery, and the Air Force, but you still need the man things on the front line, and that's where our individual gun owners come in, and everything you're saying is totally correct.
Well, there you go. And I would drive people, if you want to go find out more about what SAF is up to, saf.org. That's SAF as in Second Amendment Foundation. Alan Gottlieb, thank you so much for everything you do and for keeping us up to date. And if you would, as things break, because I know it's happening fast, let me know. We'll get you back on here for updates, okay?
Deal. Thank you very, very, very much.
All right. You take care. Alan Gottlieb, Second Amendment Foundation. All right. We're open lines now. We can talk about the guns you're buying, the guns you're selling. You're not selling guns, are you really? 866-TALK-GUN.
Introducing the all-new St. Victor from Springfield Armory. Our versatile line of battle-ready configurations designed for serious shooters and built on the rock-solid St. platform for unwavering reliability. Available in carbine-length rifle, SBR, and pistol configurations, each St. Victor is purpose-built and loaded with features to deliver ultimate performance under extreme conditions. The all-new St. Victor from Springfield Armory. Never a victim. Always the victor.
Visit guntalk.com/win to enter to win one of 26 prizes in GunTalk's Pot of Prizes giveaway. Up for grabs are cases of Streak Ammo from Ammo Inc., $200 gift certificates to GalcoGunLeather.com, Mantis Laser Training Academy kits, Alpha Competition handgun triggers from Timney Triggers, $250 gift certificates for SafariLand.com, or the new Walther PDP Compact. Enter now through April 2nd at GunTalk.com/win.
This is Marty Hayes, president of the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network. Do you have self-defense insurance or belong to an organization backed by an insurance company? If so, understand insurance companies do not have your best interests at heart. They work for themselves. We are different. Instead of insurance, we have our own legal defense fund of close to $3 million, money set aside for your defense. To learn more, go to armedcitizensnetwork.org. That's armedcitizensnetwork.org.
All right, 866-TALK-GUN. We're open lines if you'd like to join us. Buying a gun, selling a gun, shooting a gun. Took the granddaughters out. We did a little shooting. 7 and 10 years old. Ryan actually was teaching them. He's the father. Using a Ruger 2245 pistol. Mark 4, Mark 5? I can't remember. The lightweight one. Really cool looking. Blue. They had a good time. Obviously very close supervision. They've been shooting BB guns and airsoft guns for a while. They understand that and started shooting 22s. 7 and 10. I don't have a problem with that under very close supervision. What do I mean by very close, okay? I'm talking about not just touching distance, but touching. Literally in contact with the youngster while she is shooting, especially the young one. The older one may be a foot away so Ryan could reach in and redirect a muzzle if need be. But in the case of the young one, you're basically just, you know, you're right there with her, holding on to her. She's holding the gun, she's shooting it, but you're always ready to move in. I do pretty much the same thing when I'm teaching anybody, adult or whatever. I want to be standing close enough to where I can reach in and hold on to the barrel of the gun. If it should start to swing away, go, nope, let's just keep that muzzle pointed down range there. It's just a thing. Have you considered, just throw this out for thought, have you considered becoming a firearms instructor? There are a lot of people listening to this right now who have a lot of experience with shooting, with guns. Been shooting all your life. And that might be you've been shooting for 40 years. It may be that you've been shooting, you know, for 5 years. You started as a teenager or at 20 or whatever, and you're 20, in your mid-20s or you're 30. But you have experience. Is it possible that that would be a good outlet for you? As part of your outreach for the Second Amendment, is teaching gun safety, becoming a certified firearms instructor. And there are at least a couple of agencies. It's one of the things that the NRA has done through the years, and one of the reasons that we're trying to save the NRA is because it is the leading organization for firearms training, firearm safety training out there. Speaking of that, here's a little update. Of course, you know that this debacle, this thing that's going on with the NRA. I actually have people writing me and say, what are you talking about? I don't know. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, how can you not know about this? The NRA has, it's my take. Okay, this is me talking, right? So apply all of that. You may disagree. I think the leadership there has completely eviscerated and raped the organization, has taken the money out, put it in their own pockets, legally or illegal. I don't know what the deal is. The courts will figure all that deal out. Spent money on private jets, hundreds of thousands of dollars, spent money for, believe it or not, custom-made suits for Wayne LaPierre to the tune of $250,000. I'm not making this up. Your $35 due is going for that. As a result, it has spiraled downward. Donations are down. They have filed for bankruptcy trying to get out of a lawsuit. The New York State Attorney General's office has sued the NRA trying to dissolve the whole organization and specifically going after several of the leaders, including Wayne LaPierre. I'm told by people who know this stuff, it's not my world, that there could be criminal violations involved. And so now it's all in bankruptcy court, believe it or not. At the same time, the NRA is saying, we're doing fine, we have $50 million or more, and out of the same breath, they're saying, but we're filing for bankruptcy. I'm not sure that's in good faith. The court will determine that. But something that happened on Friday that I've been hoping to have happen, I've been, frankly, talking to some of the key people about and saying, you need to do this, and they finally did that, is petitioning the bankruptcy court to form a committee to represent the largest creditors who are not represented in the bankruptcy court. Those creditors would be you and me. That'd be, oh yeah, the members. There was nobody before the bankruptcy court representing the members. If there are, in fact, 5 million members, and if they are, in fact, owed magazines, you know, American Rifleman, American Hunter, all the magazines that are published, that's a liability. Chalk it up to $9 to $12 for each member for the magazines times whatever that number is. Even if you're just using life members, it's a huge number. So 4 board members, people on the board, have petitioned the court to form a committee to represent the members. Phil Journey, Rocky Marshall, these are the Esther Snyder, I think she was a member, a board member, not now, and Buzz Mills, yeah, you might recognize that name, he's the guy who owns and operates Gunsight, have filed asking the bankruptcy court to appoint an official committee to represent the members of the NRA. I hope that will be done. There's a lot of maneuvering. I was going to use other words, but the lawyers are jumping after me. A lot of maneuvering going on behind the scenes on this thing. A lot of people, the NRA lawyers, trying to get this thing pushed aside, maybe making a deal. Who knows? We're hearing that there might be a deal being tried to be made with the New York Attorney General's office. So they pushed back the hearings by a week. And actually today, as we're speaking right now, the NRA is having a board of directors meeting. We don't know what's going to come out of that. But as soon as I find out, if it happens while I'm on the air, I'll let you know what I know. It's a freaking mess over there. The term cluster comes to mind. We'll be right back. How many times have you heard me say, you got to stand up, speak up, show up? That really is it. If you count yourself as a Second Amendment activist, as a constitutional rights warrior, we have to speak up, show up, stand up, make our positions known. And sometimes, frankly, that's not convenient. Can't tell you how many times I've heard people give the excuse, well, you know, those anti-gun people, they don't have jobs. I have a job. I can't go to the legislature. They all have jobs. Give me a break. Just make excuses. What if you had to go all the way across the country from the West Coast to the East Coast? Oh, man, that would be inconvenient. Give me a break. It's an opportunity. And a guy who just did that this past week and did a terrific job for us joins us right now. Chris Chang, you may know him from the Top Shots TV show. Professional shooter now. Chris, welcome.
Hey, Tom. Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
You bet. So you testified before United States Congress this week. Wow.
Yeah, it's a feather in my cap, and you know, it came up very last minute and on short notice. I found out late Friday that my invitation, was extended, and then the testimony was on Tuesday.
Wow!
And so I had to, you know, take a day off work. Yeah, flew across the country from San Francisco to D.C., and it was the experience of a lifetime. And also, I hope that the message that I sent to the Congress was a hopefully unique one that helps move the needle, because I think we're all a little frustrated with how we just continue to sort of, you know, chase our own tail and spin around in circles with the gun rights debate. And
let me take that. let me tee this up for you. Okay. For those who don't know, and you've been on the show enough, we've talked about this. One of the things that happens to us as gun owners is the other side likes to pigeonhole us and portray us in such a way that we are not sympathetic figures. Typically, it's those old white, straight guys. We can ignore them. So when you get up there and you say, well, I'm Asian, and they could see that you're young, and I'm gay, and I'm a shooter, it's kind of like they go, what?
Right.
What just happened here? So, I mean, and I know there are people who are on our side who say, well, we shouldn't have to say that. And they're right. We shouldn't have to do that. But in the world of media and public perception, this is not a bad way to go to break people out of that, I don't know what you'd even call it, the stereotype world, which is so common there. So how did it go? How did the whole testimony thing go?
Yeah, I mean, all in all, I'm really pleased with how it went. And, you know, I opened my introduction, you know, very clearly wanting to tell my American story. And so part of this is about, you know, really showing that it doesn't matter if you're Asian or another race or if you're gay, or it just doesn't matter what any of your sort of identity politics looks like, that the Second Amendment community is a very diverse community. And right, the Second Amendment is for everybody who decides to exercise their right to self-defense with a firearm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I really wanted to break down, not just break down some stereotypes, some barriers, but, you know, the key message of my testimony was that gun control has a racist past and that it has been used as a tool of discrimination against particular races in America, mm-hmm. the African-American community being probably the most obvious one.
Right.
But Asian Americans have not escaped that either. And with the internment of 110,000 innocent Japanese Americans during World War II, that was done under the guise of public safety and national security. And if we look at the gun control legislation under consideration today, it's also being used as a tool to discriminate against law-abiding citizens. And we are unfairly being targeted and having restrictions and, you know, confiscations and bans being all discussed. And that's just not right. Why are we allowing the smallest of smallest percentages of criminals who are using firearms to commit crimes dictate, you know, policy and law that's gonna unfairly discriminate against the law-abiding majority? I just don't understand how that's coming to be.
Well, you're a smart dude, and you understand that that's not really what's going on. It's a whole different power play going on. It has been for 50-plus years where mm-hmm. that's the argument that's being made, but the goal is simply purely disarmament. It has nothing to do with, are we going to stop criminals? That's just what they use, the tool they use to try to get the public to buy in to whatever the scary thing of the moment is, whether it's way back it was Saturday Night Specials, which are small guns, or sniper rifles, which are big guns, or AR-15s, which are scary-looking guns. It's just whichever category they could slice off and get banned at a time, they'll go for that one.
Yep, absolutely. And, you know, I know anti-gun folks, they kind of often wince at the slippery slope argument. And I think what's frustrating about the debate and discussion is that we're not thinking critically about the logic of gun control and this eventual path of full disarmament, right? And to your point, it's like, well, look, if we ban Saturday Night Specials, well, what's next, right? Today it's AR-15s, right? The next thing is we're just going to go right down the line of, well, after AR-15s are banned, what's the next dangerous, you know, weapon type
it's going to be used in the next
mass shooting?
It's always the next thing, because none of it actually works if works means reducing crime, because we've tried every form of gun control imaginable in the United States, including confiscation and bans, and none of them have ever reduced crime. And so every time they pass something, it's destined to fail, which brings them to whatever is the next thing. I mean, just this morning, you may not have seen this, just this morning on Meet the Press, Chris Murphy, Democrat of Connecticut, he's saying that we got to get the Republicans to buy in on these latest measures because that'll convince everybody that they can get along with us and we don't need to blow up the filibuster. And then I love this. He says, and I think that the theory of the case is that once we convince Republicans that the sky doesn't fall for you politically when you support a reasonable expansion of something like background checks, love this next line, you can move on to other interventions. In other words, we wanted to get this one done, but we actually really, really want to move on to even more gun control, even though we're telling you this is all we want.
Yeah, it's what I keep on hearing from the anti-gun side is things like nobody's talking about confiscating or taking your guns away. But then there's literally, you have Senator Feinstein, Biden, Pelosi, you know, Kamala Harris, like they're literally saying these things.
Yes.
So it's you know, speaking, you know, bringing, you know, power to truth and speaking our truth is, it's frustrating to have to keep on, you know, repeating our arguments. But that's part of the, this, right? It is about how do we not just win, you know, minds with facts and figures, but how do we win the hearts, right? This is a hearts and minds campaign.
Okay.
You know, right. That's how I look at this.
Right.
And we need to bring, we have to bring our passion. We have to bring our passion and emotion into, like, why this is important to us, right? And why is it important to me? The Second Amendment is important because it enables and empowers me to protect myself and the people that I love when law enforcement and the government can't be there for me, which I don't expect or anticipate them to always be there for me.
That's perfect.
And
Chris, hold on to that thought a second. I'm up against my break. I'm going to hold you over here. But the idea that's we're going to expand upon this idea of taking your passion and sharing it, because people can recognize your passion. And then they want to know, why are you so passionate about this? And then maybe some of them are going to say, what is it I'm missing here about what I've been told? You know, because they keep telling me nobody wants to take your guns, except that when President Biden says we want to ban your guns, and people say he doesn't want to ban your guns, I'm saying, well, so when he says he wants to ban the guns, you're saying he doesn't mean he wants... This is so crazy. It's just nuts. 866-TALK-GUN. Be right back. Talking with Chris Ching from Top Shots. Be right back.
More than a century of engineering and innovation paved the way for Walther's latest defensive handgun, the Performance Duty Pistol. The PDP is optics ready and optimized for red dots and offers a new Performance Duty grip texture and trigger, plus a step chamber for pushing higher velocities. The Walther PDP is available in both full-size and compact versions and three different slide lengths. It's your duty to be ready. Find out more at waltherarms.com.
People often talk about the good old days as a time when everything was better. And during those good old days, it was hunters who stepped forward, demanding change to ensure their legacy of conservation continued. In 1934, the first federal duck stamp provided much-needed funding for wetlands conservation during the Dust Bowl era. In 1937, the Pittman-Robertson Act placed a tax on firearms and ammunition allocated for wildlife conservation, supported by waterfowl hunters and sportsmen. Ducks Unlimited was founded the same year, ensuring a bright future for wetlands habitat across North America. And now, like then, Ducks Unlimited needs hunters and sportsmen to achieve its mission. The almost 15 million acres Ducks Unlimited has conserved are a direct result of the sporting community rising to meet waterfowl and wildlife habitat preservation challenges head-on. Learn how you can help Ducks Unlimited today at ducks.org.
Visit Brownells.com for the best parts, tools, and accessories to get your build on. Building an AR? Brownells has the best uppers, lowers, barrels, handguards, and parts. What about a custom pistol build? Brownells has both 80% and complete handgun frames, slides, and barrels to make your handgun what you want. Brownells also has articles and videos to help you build and customize your firearms. Go to Brownells.com and start your gun build today.
We're talking with Chris Ching winner, champion of Top Shot. Chris, I'm looking at your Facebook Facebook page. I'm looking at this picture of you and Maj Touré and Diana Muller. And I'm looking at this, and as you say, on short notice, these three people, the three of you, dropped what you were doing and went to D.C. and testified. And that's kind of that whole deal of we have to be, and none of this was convenient to any of you. You all had lives. You all had things planned, and you simply had to tear them all up and say, this is a huge opportunity for me to be an advocate for the Second Amendment.
Exactly. And, you know, I you know, just jumped at the opportunity, and, you know, Maj and Diana were tremendous allies and supporters. And like you said, they too dropped what they were doing. And both of them literally said, Chris, if you want us there, we'll be there. And I hadn't even thought about bringing anybody until Diana had mentioned it to me. I'm like, yeah, it would be really helpful to have not just the moral support, but even just, you know, the visual of seeing, right,
yes.
Maj, who's African-American, Diana, who's a woman, me, who's, you know, gay, Asian, just the three of us standing in the United States Senate, you know, Judiciary Committee meeting and representing our country and what we believe to be our constitutional right to defend ourselves with the firearm. It was such a moment, I think, for me just, personally and for our community.
And with you guys just standing there, just the image of you are saying, this is America's gun owners. These are the people you're talking about. Quit trying to pigeonhole us and make us think, you know, or make people think that we're one thing. What we really are is we're everybody. We're your neighbors. We're your friends. We're your coworkers. Second Amendment supporters are everywhere, and we believe in the right to protect ourselves, and we're going to fight for that. You know, and you got there and you gave a great testimony. One of the things I was wondering about is, you know, even though we've had the Pink Pistols out for a long time, there are fairly significant gay organizations that are very much anti-gun. That's got to be frustrating.
Yeah, absolutely. It goes very, in my mind, right, it's counter to logic. So, right, if any group of people are marginalized and trying to be silenced, and if they're also under threat, the logical conclusion is if you're under threat, you need to protect yourself. And if you need to protect yourself, well, firearm is a clear top choice. And I don't understand, I do understand. I mean, the reason why a lot of LGBT organizations are anti-gun is basically because they're in gay culture, right? You're supposed to be a Democrat. And you're therefore, right, if you're a Democrat, you're supposed to be anti-gun, which is just, that's just a false train of thought, right?
It's an orthodoxy.
Exactly. And right, there's plenty of Democrats and plenty of liberals who are pro-gun,
yes,
right, and pro-Second Amendment. And so this is not a political thing, but the point is the culture of, right, different communities is extremely strong. And so if you, in the gay community, right, if you're not encouraged or if you don't see gay people like me saying, hey, if you are under threat, you should at least think about purchasing a firearm or at least going to the range and shooting a gun to just see what it's like, right?
Try it out
before you buy. Yeah,
there you
try
go.
It out. There's no harm in going to the range and seeing what you're missing out. And, you know, I guess the other quick thing I want to mention about my testimony is...
Right, and we're short on time. Go fast, please.
Yeah, so the main point is, you know, that the America, we have what is, you know, phrased as a gun violence problem, and that the problem is guns. Mm-hmm. And that was mentioned in the hearing. And the problem is not guns. The problem is the violence, right? We need to focus on solving for the violence and the hate.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what's going to make our country safer, not by taking more guns away from the hands of law-abiding Americans.
And that's why he did such a great job. Chris, thank you so much. You're welcome here anytime, my friend.
Thank you, Tom. Appreciate it.
All righty, you take care. Chris Chang, Top Shot. Tell you, when they look at it, they realize, hey, maybe we've been lied to on this. Yeah, you have. How often do you practice your draw? If you carry a gun for protection, how often do you actually practice your draw? Well, not enough is probably the most common answer. daily would be a good... and here's the thing. Once or twice a day, one or two draws a day helps, makes a difference. You can actually do that when you're taking your gun off or putting it on in the morning. And yeah, I know people say, with a loaded gun? Yes, with a loaded gun. Honestly, if you can't draw your gun out of your holster without shooting it, you might not want to be carrying a gun at all. And you don't have to be going fast. And if you come out and you point it somewhere, you want to be pointed in a safe direction, something preferably that would catch a bullet should you screw up. But there's really no reason that you should be worried about that. But if that makes you nervous, that's okay. Unload it, completely unloaded, and practice a few draws. And you really ought to be practicing your trigger press just with a very unloaded gun. The idea being that we're trying to press the trigger without disturbing the sights. I just watched a video with Rob Latham. He says aiming is overrated. His whole point was, if you can't press the trigger without disturbing the sights, then aiming doesn't matter. Because you aimed and then you yanked the sights off the target anyway. So why aim in the first place? It's an interesting take. I kind of understand where he's going. Joe's with us out of Jefferson, Texas on 5. Went to a training class. Hey, Joe, where'd you go? What'd you learn?
Well, actually, I want to piggyback off the guy who called you and told you he'd taken his first training class and the things that he learned. And it reminded me of my first training class years ago. Uh-huh. And one of the things he talked about, the critical nature of time and how things happen so fast. And I remember one of our first instructors said, if you're excellent on the range, you'll be mediocre in a gunfight. But that's okay because mediocre can win gunfights.
And that's a great way to put it.
One of the things he taught us, like we would do time shots, you know, 3 rounds in 3 seconds, and it was amazing how many of us would finish up too fast, you know, like 1.5 seconds. Mm-hmm. So one of the things I began to realize is, yeah, things happen fast, but they may not happen as fast as you think they need to happen. And that's one of the advantages of taking classes and training is you do learn, I got this. You know, I know the time. I know what it just helps you so much. You don't have to react with a lot of panic.
And, you know, you use the word react. Let's talk about that for a second, because the reality is both you and the bad guy are not going to start on the buzzer. The bad guy's actions are the buzzer, which means you're always behind. You are always reacting, and hence the reason you need to move quickly. But as you say, but quickly may mean a lot of different things. And if you set your timer for 3 seconds when it goes off, as you say, you can draw and shoot, and then you're sitting there waiting for the second beep for it to go 3 seconds. If you got a part-time set up, you're going, wow, 3 seconds is actually pretty long once you practice. But it is the value of that kind of training, and it. And, Joe, you make the point, and thank you for the call, sir. That's very helpful. So much of what you get in training is setting up expectations. It is training your mind, training you to think about things differently, training you to see things differently. Some of it's shooting, sure, and certainly learning how to manipulate your gun and operate your gun and all the rest of it. But so much of it is resetting your thinking about things. And maybe you draw quickly, you go bang, bang. And then slowly you move up to the head and then bang, 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 bang. Not bang, bang, bang. Well, why would you do that? Well, it's harder to make that little shot into that little 2x3-inch square that you're trying to hit up there. These are the kind of things you'll learn when you go to a real training class and then go and go again. 866-TALK-GUN. More news breaking right here on Gun Talk.